Jesus didn't have a problem with people that's in the streets. He had a problem with religious people.
How can I help anybody when I'm not even, when I was not even able to help my own son?
I would never do that. I would never do that. And I became that in a matter of minutes when they took my pain pills away.
And I said, I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not what I used to be.
Ugh. This is Faith in Your Recovery. I am Randy Davis. Welcome to the battle. Here we are already this afternoon at part number 6 of Jailhouse Recovery under the umbrella of Faith in Your Recovery podcast, available on all major platforms. Obviously, we're live now. That means you can call us with your question. Get a hold of us with any, you know, any kind of interest you have. Let us know. If you want to make a comment, feel free to do that. We're here today at the J. County Security Center in Portland, Indiana. This is a first, not just for us, but probably a first in the nation that we are aware of any podcast taking place in a county jail. We appreciate the Jay County Sheriff, Mr. Ray Newton, and his staff for making this much easier for us and all the support and help that they've offered. And we're happy to have the staff of the Christian Center out of Anderson, Indiana, alongside, helping us out with everything that we need, the setup and all. It's a good thing. We're happy. Sit back and enjoy Jailhouse Recovery, part number 6. Our guest today is a longtime friend, somebody I've known for years, Mr. Brian Stiles. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you guys for having me.
Hey, thank you for being alongside. Brian, why'd you say yes to coming? Why'd you say yes to exposing yourself like this, to being raw, to being real? Why do you have an interest?
Because I feel like my story can help somebody. And even if it just helps one person, then that to me, that's a success.
Well, that turns this situation, your incarceration, at least it gives you a positive impact and influence. And we're not here to glorify drugs. We're not here to glorify incarceration. We're here because both are taking place in your life right now, and we appreciate your willingness to share that. Let's go back a bit, Brian. Tell us about early life, what it was like. Now, I know a lot about you, but there's going to be some things I don't know, okay?
I was born in Indy, moved up here when I was really young. I had a single mom. Mom did the best she could. I have a great mother. I don't know what I'd do without her. Had a pretty normal childhood, and then I, very young in age, right about my preteen years, I had some traumatic stuff happen, and, you know, it kind of, childhood ended there, and I started turning to substances or anything.
What were those first substances? What'd you first turn to?
Marijuana was the first thing I went to. I would say the first thing, I used to be a really bad cutter. That was probably the first thing I did, and then...
Explain to folks, I know what a cutter is, but to anybody who may not know, explain to them.
I started out with just like superficial things on top of my legs, you know, so my mom couldn't see them, because I never told my mom what had happened to me. It did take me 20 years to tell her that. But, you know, underneath pant legs on the thighs and stuff where she couldn't see. And then as I got older, they progressed to, you know, my wrist and stuff. And that's when she found out I had a cutting problem. And then I started hanging out with a cousin, and he was pretty much always stoned. So I was like, I'm going to try this. And that's where it all started to go downhill.
I want you to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I want to make sure everybody understands the idea of cutting, of being a cutter. We inflict pain on ourselves in hope that it'll be greater than that inward pain we're feeling. It's an expression of that pain trying to cover it up with a greater pain.
That's exactly right. That's what I was trying to do, but I was At first, it worked for a minute, but, you know, as you'll hear further along in my story, it only works for so long.
That's pretty much the case with about any drug. There's that progressive spiral downhill.
Yep.
We build up that resistance, so we've got to move to something a little harder that give us a better high or mask our struggle more so. So then you've got that friend, he's into the marijuana, and you just come alongside, why not? Let's give that a try.
Yeah, pretty much.
Was that the kind of thing? It worked for a while, and then you had to move to something else?
Yeah, that worked for a while. And
how long, Brian?
Probably a year and a half, 2 years. I was 13, almost 14 first time.
So how long were you a cutter?
It was a couple of years.
Okay, so about the same length of time with each one. So we got a pattern coming
here. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on from marijuana.
Well, my first day of my freshman year, I was hanging out with a buddy, and we stayed up all night doing cocaine. That's the first time I'd ever done it. So, you know, I was 15. I think I just turned 15, maybe 16. But that started that. And then I still got high. I was still smoking weed, and then, you know, started using cocaine pretty heavily, all behind my mom's back. And got my first job, and then
what was that first job?
I made chicken at KFC.
okay, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but then a lot of people there, nobody ever held a gun to my head. I made all these decisions myself, you know, but they were put in front of me. And, like, I didn't know at the time that I had an addictive personality. You know, I thought I was just numbing something, but it turned out much bigger than that. I tried meth for the first time at probably 17, or as they called it back in the day, it was crank, you know. It's like, wow, I've been up for days, and, you know, my room's clean. And that's when mom started to notice things, too, because my room was a mess, you know. I was a kid going to high school, and
It's terrible when they clean rooms and give away to a problem, okay? Yeah.
She's like, all his clothes are in the dirty bath, in the hamper.
Where they belong,
So she...
How crazy.
And then I got away from that job, and ultimately I ended up dropping out of school. I was done with it, I guess. And it was really, you know, getting into the way of me staying high all the time. And then mom made me move in with dad.
How old were you?
17.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and my dad wasn't there. Didn't have a very good relationship with my father. So when mom told him, hey, it's either this or I'm just going to have, you know, YOC or somebody, I'm having put up for a while. And, like, I wasn't doing really bad things. It was just, you know, I had a mom that cared. And that back then, I didn't think so. But now, as a man with children of my own, you know, all the people I was hanging out with whose parents would let them, you know, smoke or, you know, drink at the house on the weekends, I'm the only one of them who's never made it to prison. I'm also one of the very few that are still alive. So,
yeah, I'll tell you, you and I are close enough geographically and have been for a lot of years. We know a lot of those same names.
Yep.
And I've been a part of the funeral service for many of them.
Probably most of them.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I know a part of that area of struggle and what it's looked like and the lives it's taken and impacted. So how long had your addiction been going on? Let's go all the way back to the cutting. Let's begin there.
See, I started cutting probably when I was 12. I think when I had what happened to me, it was the summer I would have been 12. It was like the year 2000 because I was born in 88. And I remember that. And it was the first time me and my dad had really ever had a big fight because I had asked to, I wanted to go home, obviously, because my dad lived in Indy. We lived up here. So I had to go spend 6 weeks at my dad's house for the summer. And sometimes it was great. Other times it was hell on earth. And this is the first time I'd ever asked to go home. And he wasn't happy. So it took a while for him to finally, you know, because this is back before cell phones were everywhere. You know, mom worked a lot, so I'd call her on the home phone to talk to her and, you know, sometimes be at work. You know, she's a single mom with two kids, so she worked a lot. Finally, I ended up getting to go home, and that's when the cutting started. Because I didn't know how to tell my mom what had happened, because, you know, I'm got a great mom. And obviously, I feel like had I told her what had happened, she probably would have went to prison for murder, you know. But I started cutting at 12, around that age. And then I think I smoked weed one time when I was 13. Wasn't a fan at first. And then started hanging out with, you know, people. And it's like the thing to do. So it progressed. About 14, I was every day. And then the cocaine use pretty heavily from 16 to 17. 17, 18, back to weed. Because when I lived with my dad, his rules were not the same as mom's, if you know what I mean. Was there for about 2 months. And like when I dropped out of school, mom told me, you know, GED classes, stuff like that. Well, not long after I dropped out of school, she caught me getting high with the neighbor. So go to dad's. Dad had like six weeks, 8 weeks to get me enrolled in classes. Never did it. So mom's like, I want him home. So I came back home. Things were good for a while. I guess I kind of needed that. It's kind of like being in here, you know. I was out there messing up, so I kind of needed a break. Turned 18, still messed around, and then got my first factory job, and then switched jobs. Started working at a Mosey's over in Dunkirk, and then cut my finger off. I bet I'm the first guy with 9 fingers on the podcast.
Not sure about that, but I'll keep an eye out for now on.
I then, you know, had surgeries to try and save it, and then I found out I really like morphine. I was like, wow, this is awesome. So, and when I got out, they had written me, I had a couple different scripts for a couple different pain pills. Didn't abuse them. I took them like I was supposed to. And then after 6 months of physical therapy and stuff like that, and they're like, well, you know, those are gone. Started getting sick for the first time, and I'm like, I don't like this at all. So I started the pain pills, and that started about 11, 12 years of opiate addiction. So that was fun. Not really, but.
So you've spent about 20 years in addiction of some type?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And I'll be 36 in a couple of weeks, so well over half my life.
So what was your lowest bottom? Your rock bottom during that?
I'd say my rock bottom was probably my 29th birthday, actually. You know my kids' mom, and I have two beautiful sons. I love my kids. Just throw that out there. She had gotten arrested, or got for house arrest, and ended up in here for like 17 months or something like that. And I drove semi, and I wasn't over the road anymore, because I've got two kids plus their older brother that I'm helping take care of. I got to raise and take care of, so I had to be home more. And I had been sober for some time. I had been on the Vivitrol shot and started saying the old, I can do it one time, you know. And then while I was high, I got the great idea. I'm like, you know what? I was like, I'm just going to kill myself, because then the boys will get a Social Security check for till they're 18. They'll be taken care of. You know, my youngest was 6 months old. I think Ben was just about 2. So I attempted suicide via overdose, and that was my lowest. Didn't realize that. I realized at that time until I came. Well, when they got me back, and the thing my mom said to me when I came back, because, you know, like I said, it was my 29th birthday. I had been sober for so long, and like had only been back on stuff for like a couple of weeks, and wasn't using heavily, but like I was just in a dark, deep, dark depression, and like, you know, didn't think I was being a good dad, and didn't think, you know, I was doing them any good. So that's when I got that idea, and so I didn't tell him, you know, obviously. Didn't leave a note or anything. Luckily, my mom was home. found me unresponsive. And then my neighbor across the street, who was one of my best friends and guardian angels, he heard my mom screaming, and he came running across. He did chest compressions while my mom breathed for me for 35 minutes. And one of the paramedics that showed up was a childhood friend and just refused to give up on me, got me back. And when I came back to my mom, said, I remember just looking at my mom and her saying, bringing you into this world.
That's all right, man.
Was not nearly as hard as watching you almost leave, because I was dead. I had no pulse for 9 minutes.
You shouldn't be here
today. I shouldn't be here, but
must be a reason you are.
And that day was the last time I touched heroin. No, August 5th, 2017.
What was it? What was that lights on time that made you think, I can and I will beat this? I'm not saying it's been a perfect road since then.
No, definitely not.
What was it that encouraged you to move forward?
I think my kids. Like I said, I grew up without a dad, and I'm messed up from it. Like, it's done some damage. I remember Ezra, who's my youngest, he, 6 months old, using daddy as a jungle gym that night when I'm still recovering from the Narcan, the headache and everything, and he's just crying. He was just loving on me, and it's just like, I remember having that moment where it was just like, my father chose not to be in my life. Granted, when my dad died, I had a great relationship with him, but it took him being diagnosed with cancer to get that relationship, and him just loving on me and, kissing on me, just, being daddy's boy. And it's like, I was, for that moment, I was willing to give all this up, being a dad's the best, that's the best thing that has ever happened to me. I love those boys with all my heart. And it's like, I was just, they would have ended up, I won't say they'd ended up like me, but, they would have been on the same road. So it's, my kids are what keeps me around. That's what keeps me going.
I've got a tough question for you. I know you. I know your heart. The best, friend at our level can know each other's heart, okay?
Yeah.
How can you say you love your kids that much and be in a place like this?
That's a good one. Oh, man. That's a good one.
That's all right.
I think what's different this time around is, I'm in here for a probation violation. I didn't fail any drug tests or anything, just didn't pay my fines and stuff. And
so today is not about drug usage, your reason for being here. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's I'm not saying that I was out there not living a perfect life, because none of us do, but I was out there not making the best decisions.
Gotcha.
I think the difference is now, the last time I was in here, my oldest, he doesn't like to talk to me when I'm in here. And I get it. I understand. I get the okays and all that, but I love you, daddies. They were actually at my house when I was arrested, because it's summertime and me and their mom operate week on, week off, and they just happened to be with me. And I think what this time, I'm not coming back here. I don't care what I got to do. I heard, they obviously seen the cop, and I told him, daddy's got to go to jail, and just seeing them break. And start crying. The one time, I got arrested, I was very calm. And then when I heard my kids cry, mom's not happy about the dent in her refrigerator, I'll tell you that.
I'm not comparing this to your earlier trauma in life.
Okay.
But that had to be trauma to a degree for them.
Right, and I'm so glad I have said, me and their mom get along so well, because, she explained to him, They've asked me, because, you know, kids are on YouTube, they hear things, and my youngest had made a comment about drugs. I don't know what it was. I don't remember, but I remember, and I was like, he says, I can't remember exactly, but I was like, you know, some people, and he's kind of looked at me. I was like, you know, some people, it just happens. I was like, you never see it coming. I mean, I couldn't help myself, because I'm honest with them, because my dad lied to me so much that I just, my outlook is, if I lie about something little, when they're older, they're going to be like, well, what else was he lying about?
Exactly.
So I'm like, I didn't give them all the dirty details. They didn't need to know that. But I, nope. You know, I informed them, like, you know, dad's had a problem before, you know, and he's kind of looked at me. I'm like, and I was like, and you tell me all the time, I'm your hero. I was like, so you know what I mean? He's kind of, I don't know, he's kind of took it like shock and awe. Like, he, you know, to him, I wear a cape, and it's like, yeah, it's not always been like this, buddy. But he, I think I just surprised him more than anything, because he was like, really? And me and their mother are both recovering addicts. And, you know, statistically speaking, both of our kids should probably grow up to be addicts. And I know we're both doing everything we can to break those chains,
to keep that from happening.
Because she's sober now, and like, I'm beyond proud of her. And I called her to come get him, and she was pretty cool. And she showed up, and the cops were there. Like, you know, I'm a firm believer. Like, I can't run. I got one good leg, so I'm not running anywhere. So like, we were sitting outside, and the cop was super cool. He waited till they were gone before they put the cuffs on me, which,
hooray for that individual.
I'd give them a shout out, but I don't think they want to know hear their names. But yeah, those two cops, I ever see them again, give them a hug.
Cause, well, they got the work done, but yeah, they gave you space as they were doing it.
What's really great is when you open the door and they see all of this walking, they're just like, wow, he's a monster. But I'm just a gentle giant. But I talk to him often. My mom's brought him up here twice this week to see me. And I ask them if they're mad at me, which they kind of like beat around the question. And it's like, well, it's okay if you are. I'm like, you know, you don't like me being in here. I don't like being in here. But they say they're not. So this time around, it's just, but their mom also informed them, you know, he just didn't pay his fines. So I kind of hope.
What? Not sure if this is a question you want to answer, and you're entitled to that. Do you have clean time built up?
I the last time I had used was 4 days before I came in here. So I have almost 30 days.
Congratulations.
And this time around in here, I'm in here with a good group of guys. Like, I'm walking out with a pretty good mindset. Like, it's getting to the point where my boys are in second and third grade now. And, you know, when they go to school next month, they're, what'd you do this summer? Did you hang out with your dad? And, well, dad was in jail. So it's getting to the point where it's going to be embarrassing for them.
Do you have a strategy set up, Brian, to where you believe it'll help you stay clean, stay sober?
I think when I was on the Vivitrol shot for those 6 months, it was really nice. And my mom has begged me to get back on it. So I think I'm going to do that for probably a couple months. It's just to find a routine and find a job, get into a new routine. Because once I find a new routine, it's just, and then going to have to change a few more people, places, and things. So
as long as you recognize that and do it.
Yeah.
What is there, before we wrap this up, Brian, that you want to say? Whether it's about your experience, advice, whatever it may be. And folks, we don't claim to be professionals or have all the right answers. We just know what's worked for us. Go ahead.
People, places, and things. You got to change them. We got a kid back there now who's real young. It's his first time in jail. And seems like a really good kid. So we got to telling him he's got to cut out people in his life. But I've done that, and I've had to cut out some of best friends from childhood. But you change your people, places, and things, you get a good support group, you know, a great mindset, and I mean, the sky's the limit.
You can do it.
I've done it before. I'll do it again, except only this time, outer space is my limit because I'm just not stopping. And I just want to say for the people who are struggling right now is you think you're alone, but you're not. There are millions of us who have been where you're at in those fires, and you know, we willingly walk back in there, and we can't show you the way home, but we can light up a path to get you back. So don't ever think you're alone. We're here. I'm you heard my name. I don't care if I don't know you. I have a Facebook page. I have a Messenger. You need someone to talk to, my inbox is always open, no matter what. So
Ryan, thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, it's been a treat. I knew it would be, and I even warned some of these people about you when you came in, all right?
Yeah.
But note what you've had to share is certainly vital.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And I told you this before, and I'm going to tell you again. I don't want to see you in here next time I come,
I do not look good in brown, so it's not happening.
I'll be glad to see you on the streets of Dunkirk or Red Key.
You're gonna see me at a lot of meetings.
Hopefully.
You'll see me and Kyle, the guy that was just in here.
Yeah.
You're going to see us at the Liberty meeting, actually.
All right. Yeah.
Made a pretty good friend in here. So.
Good deal. Well, listen, folks, we thank you for listening in for part 6 of our Faith in Your Recovery podcast here in the Jay County Jail Security Center. Thank you for joining us on Jailhouse Recovery. Stick around. We're going to take a little break, then we're coming back with part 7. God bless. Stay in the battle. Amen.